We have talked about it endlessly over the last decade or so, and we've accomplished close to zip.
We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
At a plant in Shenzhen, dark blue solar panels roll off the assembly lines by the hundreds, helping make China the world's biggest producer.
That's Canada's CBC News reporting on why China is leading the way in the renewable energy boom. Welcome to ClimateCast, everybody. I'm NPR Chief Meteorologist Paul Huttner. Today on ClimateCast, it's been just 1 year after the hopeful atmosphere of the Paris agreements. And the U.S., though, appears to be on the verge of a major shift in climate policy. But how much can a Trump administration really impact overall global emissions in 4 years? And what's the outlook for continued rapid job growth in renewables? Andrew Light is a senior fellow in climate change program at the World Resources Institute and a professor at George Mason University. Great guest today. Andrew, welcome to ClimateCast.
Thanks, Paul.
And to those of you listening today, I want to get your calls early today because I want your perspective and questions on where we go from here. So please jump in early today. We can get you on the air. Call us at 651-227-6000 or toll-free at 800-242-2828. You can also jump online at nprnews.org/live. Andrew, I should tell our audience that you and I crossed paths last week at a National Science Foundation workshop on science communication in Washington, D.C. And I'm sorry I missed being able to chat with you. I had to get to the airport after your presentation. But I wanted to have you here today to bring some of your valuable insight to our listeners. So if you don't mind, I'd like to cover some of the ground you talked about last week, if that's okay with you.
That'd be great.
Let's start with this. You know, what a difference a year makes, right? From celebration by many of the Paris agreements a year ago to a Trump administration that may very well have a different view of climate change. What are the mechanics of a Trump administration? What can they do and what can they not do, for example, with regard to the Paris climate agreements?
Well, actually, let's back up one step, and I would sort of say it is definitely the case that we have a Trump administration that has a different view of climate change than the Obama administration. That is assuming that Trump is able to get most or all of his proposed nominees for the cabinet in. So from Secretary of State, from Rex Tillerson, to DOE, Rick Perry, Pruitt, Greg Pruitt at Environmental Protection Agency, what you have is a collection of people who have diametrically different positions, especially in the case of Pruitt and Perry, to the people who are currently in those jobs with respect to whether or not climate science is settled. And we can say definitively that this is a problem we are experiencing now, that humans are contributing to it, and that we need to do something about it. So we have turned the corner on that. We don't know exactly what they're going to do next. The two main things that they could do, which I'm very worried about, is number one, move to dismantle the Clean Power Plan, which is the center of the regulations that President Obama put in place under the authority of the Clean Air Act to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the United States, especially carbon dioxide in the transportation and the electricity sectors. Mm-hmm. And that's what's making it possible for us to live up to our global responsibilities to reduce our emissions. So that would, we expect that they will move against the clean power, Clean Power Plan very early in the next administration after the inauguration. And then secondly, they can move to either pull the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement that we were one of the leaders in creating, as you said, a year ago, or move to, in fact, pull the United States out of the Framework Convention altogether, which is the overall UN treaty that was signed by the first President Bush, passed unanimously by a Republican and Democratic Senate, or ratified unanimously by Republican and Democratic Senate in 1992, and is basically the global body that created the Paris Climate Agreement.
Well, let's war game this out a little bit because, you know, we touched on this a little bit last week. U.S. policy impacts on emissions and climate impacts. You know, our atmosphere responds, as you know, to more than just U.S. policy. There's the rest of the world. There's a surge in renewables. There's some corporate progress on reducing emissions. What's the sort of break down the effect of atmospheric forcing percentages that U.S. policy has overall on climate change?
So U.S. emissions globally are around 16% of global emissions. Now, if we just sort of took that 16% out of the global pie of emissions and did nothing with them, they continued to rise at business as usual, and everyone else in the world continued to meet the pledges that they made under the Paris Agreement and then increase their ambition, as we expected them to do when we negotiated the Paris Agreement, then it is possible that you could still get to, say, global stabilization targets that we are trying to achieve without the U.S. participating. Unfortunately, though, that's kind of not how this works.
Mm-hmm.
That the U.S. is the world's largest historical emitter of greenhouse gases, and you know that is terribly important with respect to the relationship between emissions and the long time frame in which, say, carbon dioxide especially continues to cause warming in the atmosphere. And then it also is the world's largest per capita emitter. And so there will be very big fights, say, for example, in countries like India, where I worked for 3 years as a State Department climate change negotiator in advance of Paris to try to get India into the Paris Agreement, which they did. But there will be big debates in India about whether or not India should slow down what it's doing in renewable energy in response to a United States pulling back and essentially abrogating any sense of responsibility for dealing with the problem. That could have cascading effects, and that's what I'm mostly worried about.
Sure, that makes sense. You mentioned some goals that you thought where we might be by our 2030 goals overall, no matter what a Trump administration may do with climate policy. Give us some estimates of where you think we may get to in a best and worst case scenario there.
Sure. So the pledge that we made at Paris was that we would reduce our emissions 26% to 28% below a 2005 level by 2025. And then we released a big report. The White House released a big report just a few weeks ago, saying that overall they kind of think that that with that hitting that 2025 mark and then continuing additional reductions further into the future, 2030, 2040, that by 2050 we could feasibly get to an 80% reduction in our emissions by 2050, and that's a very, very good number, and I think it's a number that would garner a lot of respect around the world, and it would not have this effect of getting other countries to potentially consider pulling back. So I'd say if the Trump administration, whatever they do, given the amount of that's being done by states and cities and by businesses, the direction of travel in the electricity industry, among electricity utilities, that we probably will still hit something like a 25% reduction by 2025. On an optimistic scenario, but I think a reasonable scenario. However, if we go through the next 4 years or more of shutting down all of our policies, the Clean Power Plan, the rules that were created by the Obama administration on methane, another very powerful greenhouse gas, things like that, I think that by 2030, we will either find it physically impossible to reduce our emissions much below 25% by 2025, or we'll find it very expensive. And that could put us in a position of never being able to hit something like a much bigger reduction by 2050. And that would, again, have a definitely have some kind of impact on what other countries decide to do.
You're listening to the Climate Cast on NPR News. Andrew Light is our guest today. He's a senior fellow in the climate change program at the World Resources Institute. He's also a professor at George Mason University in D.C. Want to hear from you if you're wondering what may happen in a Trump administration with regard to climate policy. 651-227-6000 or toll free at 800-242-2828. Andrew, let's talk about renewables. Many of us kind of observe the train has already left the station on the solar boom in the past few years. Market forces seem to be helping solar and wind move forward. Where do you see renewables curve going in the next 4 years?
That's where there's just a lot of good news. I mean, we've seen such a drop in renewable prices. For example, in the last 8 years, we've seen land-based wind power prices per kilowatt hour drop 41%. We've seen distributed solar photovoltaics drop 54%. LED light bulbs drop 94% in their cost. I mean, we just made huge strides here. And so, again, we are seeing, and we've seen great expanses, in the actual implementation and building of plants around the country and around the world. So the direction of travel is very encouraging. That's why we're going to continue to see reductions in emissions in the United States. I think the problem is, though, is that without the continued policies that were created by the Obama administration, we might also see a continued and long-term reliance on natural gas. So switching older coal plants to natural gas without any kind of real end to that natural gas bridge to a lower carbon or even zero carbon future. And if you lock in gas for too long, it really does make it, like I said before, very expensive, if not potentially impossible, to get to those bigger reductions we want to see. So I think that there's a lot that's good in all that, and I think the train has left the station. The question is, how much will we continue to see a growth in solar and wind and other zero-carbon technologies as opposed to a growth in gas?
Well, and let's talk about jobs, right? Because President-elect Trump ran on jobs, 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 if you will. And, you know, clean energy jobs are actually booming in the USA. You can correct me on these numbers if I'm wrong, but the solar industry alone, something like over 200,000 solar workers, growing at 20% a year, wind jobs growing fast. What's the trend lines going forward on renewable energy jobs? And do you think that support for that will continue?
I do think that they will continue, and you're right on those numbers. Overall, renewable energy jobs surged by around 6% in 2015 alone, so we've got over around 770,000 people employed on this. This is just so much more. I mean, the number of people employed now by coal is just a small fraction of that. In Texas alone, where our new new Secretary of Energy, Rick Perry, we saw the creation of 25,000 jobs just in the wind sector alone. So that's all there. You would think that, and I hope that, the next administration will come to see these figures, see that there is a lot of investment in these industries by Republican governors all over the country, and see a need to preserve and continue to grow those industries, because, frankly, we're not going to see the coal industry bounce back, no matter what policies you can imagine be put in place, because simply it's the case that U.S. electricity producers have switched to the cheaper alternatives, and there's cheaper stuff than coal out there, and so those jobs will not come back in the numbers that have been promised, at least during the campaign.
Andrew, we're getting a little tight on time, but I want to take a quick phone call. Bob in Edina, what's your question this morning?
Yes, I am concerned about climate change as one of the biggest issues facing our globe. And with this new administration, I would like to make charitable contributions to climate advocacy. And I'm wondering what organizations you think I should donate money to. Thank you.
Andrew, what do you think?
Well, I think it depends on which part of this you want to fund. If you want to fund, if you want to make contributions to people who are on the ground and, you know, the sort of the activists out there mobilizing mass demonstrations, then I think that a very good opportunity comes from an organization like 350.org, you know, founded by Bill McKibben, has really mobilized college students around the country. I don't agree with everything that they have put their efforts into, but I think that that is really one of the most effective grassroots organizations. You want to look at the legal fight that's going to come against rolling back the Clean Power Plan, and that will be fought in the courts. It will be slow. It's not that the Trump administration just can't sign a piece of paper and make the Clean Power Plan go away. It's going to be a court battle, because it will be the first time we tried to roll back this kind of rule under the Clean Air Act. And their organizations, such as the Natural Resources Defense Council, Earth Justice, that's where the teams of lawyers are gearing up to do the court battle. And then organizations like my own, the World Resources Institute, and others are really kind of working on the international side of this, trying to stabilize really the international conversation in response to the election of a government that might potentially pull us out of the Paris Agreement and begin to build up the coalitions of people who will continue the direction of travel in countries like India that it started with the creation of the Paris Agreement.
All right. Andrew, thank you so much. Good perspective today. Really appreciate you joining us this morning.
Happy to. Thank you.
All right. I wanted to leave you with something a little on the lighter side here, a little Dan Wilson music to take ClimateCast out today. Check this out.
We Midwesterners love talking about the weather. This year's temperature's been breaking all the records. gonna freeze, but you're here kissing me, and this is gonna be the hottest Christmas Eve ever.
So good to hear Dan perform that at the New Standards Show last year live. It was wonderful to see. That's it for ClimateCast this week. I'm Paul Huttner.